And I've been joined in the studio by Ken Tarling, who's my guest for this morning. We're going to be chatting about the portfolio that Ken has done around Doctor Who. And this particular one is the second volume. It's called Who? A History in Art. And we'll be, as I say, we'll be getting into the crux of all of that in due course. But first up, let's just say hi to Ken and find out a little bit about him. So good morning to you, Ken, sir.
Good morning.
How was your trip down from Newport this morning?
A lot easier than I expected.
Well, that's
it was good.
That's a good start, isn't it? That's an absolutely good start. Thank you so much for coming in this morning and having a little chat about the book. First up, though, always like to let my lovely listeners hear a little bit of the backstory about the person that I'm chatting to. And as we've said, obviously, clearly, your backstory is in many ways is the story, because my gosh, what an up and down life you've had with your health. But first up, though, let's just set the scene a little bit and tell people who is Ken Tarling.
I'm 54. I've been a lifelong Doctor Who fan, which is probably one of the reasons why we ended up for the book.
But yes.
I always wanted to be an art teacher. I did get sidelined when I was younger and ended up having a good job in a brewery and worked there for several years. But unfortunately, I had an accident that ripped my left hand. It snapped the left thumb in half. And unfortunately, I had something called a Roman nerves where they embed the nerves in the hand.
Mm-hmm.
It was experimental, but it worked. Unfortunately, I got bone cancer left hand. And no left thumb. It might not sound a big deal, but unfortunately I was left-handed, so it was a bit of a big deal.
Gosh, yes.
So I had to learn to write with my right hand. And frankly, at the time when I was married, and my ex-wife was more than helpful because she had to look after me as well as the children.
Right, right.
And then I decided to go back to work because even though my left hand would be classed as a disability, I thought I could still do something else.
Yes,
so I went to
yes.
security for 20 years
mm-hmm.
Because unfortunately, like I say, with the left hand, it was difficult to do any of the engineering work that I was trained to do in the beginning.
No, understood.
I had lost a lot of confidence when it came to drawing. I mean, the talent's not in your left hand, your talent's not in your hand, your talent's in you. And then when the new series came back in 2005, I seemed to have a bit of a spurt on and decided to draw like mad. A few people said, oh, they're pretty good, but I'm very judgmental of my own work.
Right, right.
So I didn't think it was fit enough to do anything with, but I carried on drawing because I had the inspiration, like I say, from 2005 when the series came back.
Mm-hmm.
But then unfortunately, June 21st, 2019, I had what's known as a AAA aneurysm. Apparently, an aneurysm you don't normally walk away from, especially a AAA.
Right, right.
I was told by the surgeon the way to explain it is if someone put a grenade inside my stomach and it blew up. So all my internal organs had moved, shifted.
Oh, goodness.
I think they must have used, they'd used 36 litres of blood, which is quite a lot.
That is a huge amount of blood.
Apparently, I died four times on the operating table then. The last time they had to massage the heart by hand.
Right, right.
Several hours they were in surgery for. They'd already told my my ex-wife and my children that I wasn't going to make it.
Mm.
But so they were a bit surprised when I did.
So, I mean, let's just sort of stop there for a moment and think about all of that, all being thrown at you, and yet you managed to claw your way back. And you've obviously got your loved ones around you who are all thinking, this is it, we're never going to see him again. I mean, talk about a roller coaster.
Oh, sure.
My
yeah.
word. And the operation was that in, what, in Newport?
It was in the Royal Gwent.
In the Royal Gwent. So
back when they had an ICU unit.
Straight away, we clearly need to, doff our caps to the Royal Gwent, because that is just quite remarkable. You've just been telling me that obviously Doctor Who has played such a big part, really, in your life, and illustrating-wise, it was always something that gave you a bit of a spur.
Oh, sure. I mean, I think I was drawing since I was 5 years old.
Gosh.
And ironically, I don't know why, but I kept a lot of them just so I could see how much I'd progressed over the years.
Right, right.
It's been a big part of my life. I think it's been a big part of everyone's life. And when it wasn't around, it just seemed a bit weird, because it is a British institute at the end of the day. But it changed with the times. When it came back, it had to change.
Yes.
If it came back exactly the same as it was in 89, probably wouldn't have worked, even though there was elements in the 89 season that it was of his time, basically.
Mm, mm, mm.
And obviously, when it came back in 2005, it was of his time then. And now in 2024, it's a completely different series again.
Yes. We're going to see a very new Doctor in the next series. But as you've rightly said, so many of those early Doctors all were very different as well, from Patrick Troughton up. I'm a John Pertwee fan, because clearly when I was about 10 or 11, he was the man.
Sure.
And that's how it was, wasn't it, really? Yeah. It was time and place in very much, I suppose.
Yeah, Pertwee was the first one I've seen as well, and at the end of the day, I don't say I've got a favourite, but obviously the first one you saw, if it wasn't for whatever they did, that made you want to watch it.
Yes.
Was obviously down to that individual person, and yeah, if Pertwee hadn't been as good as he was, I don't think I would have liked it. Even though looking back at some of his stuff, he seemed a bit harsh.
Hmm.
But I guess they all did, but I guess it was because of the times it was made.
Yeah, and I mean, clearly, there wasn't a huge choice of stuff on TV in a sort of sci-fi type way back in the 70s. And so Doctor Who absolutely continued to be a bit of a trailblazer. And I'm fascinated, as we said then, to go into this whole sort of illustrating stuff, because clearly it was a big spur for you, though.
I don't know what hit me. It was like lightning just struck me, but... I thought I really used to enjoy drawing. Let's just do it again.
Yeah.
And then, like I say, in 2005, I didn't stop. I'm not saying all my pictures were brilliant, mind. But my intention was to draw a picture for every single story they'd ever done.
Ah, right, right.
And I got to about the end of Tennant, and that was about... And then I think work got in the way, and, I took a promotion from security, so I was working days, and... I couldn't draw the stuff at night like I used to, so I kind of stopped for a while then, about 2016, I think.
Right. Now, Ken, we've been finding out that you have had a roller coaster of a ride with your health as well, which clearly has impacted on your ability to do all sorts of things, not at least just breathe and get on with life. We found out about that first near-death experience that you had before the news. So just take us a little bit further along the line. And obviously, don't be too graphic with people, because my listeners, they're a bit squeamish, you know, bless them. But where did your health issues take you after that first near-death experience?
I think I was in hospital for about a week, week and a half. I was in ICU for about 3 or 4 days. Like I say, the work they do in ICU is... they were only youngsters, and they had to deal with a lot of things on a daily basis. I just think they're very, very, very underrated by what they do.
No doubt.
But that's another story.
Yes.
I came out then, and life was brilliant. Everything seemed so colourful, and music seemed to be a new thing. I don't know, it was a strange inspiration I had. But then about 7 days, five to seven days... after coming out of hospital, I had a nosebleed, and I don't suffer from nosebleeds. And it was one of these nosebleeds, it was like you turned the tap on, it was just gushing out.
Oh, dear.
So anyway, cut long story short, I was rushed into hospital. I was in a coma. They had to give me cardiac arrest. So I had a cardiac arrest, and they had to resuscitate me. 7 seconds that time, I think, I died for. I was in a coma for a couple of days. Thankfully, my ex-wife talked me out of it, even though some people say that they can't hear you, but they can hear you. They can definitely hear you when they're in a coma, and it does make a big difference. So when I came out of that, I was feeling a little bit disillusioned with life, thinking, well, why have you checked this one at me as well?
No surprise.
But I got over that. I do have a few problems with the displacement. With my certain organs, but I think not after, it was about a year after that, I had a hernia. It was quite a nasty one. It was like I was had a baby strapped to my stomach. It was that large. But unfortunately, it was COVID, and they didn't want to operate unless they really had to because of the regulations at the time. Yes. And it ended up being ruptured. So I was rushed into hospital. They gave me two options that night. They said, there was going to be two outcomes. Mm. When they were going to perform surgery next morning, they said, either you're going to die or either you have to wear a colostomy bag the rest of your life. Well, both options didn't really work for me. And they also said, phone up your loved ones, say goodbye.
Oh, goodness.
And I knew with the children, they weren't going to answer the phone, so I had to leave a stupid message. Jill was different because she's the one that rushed me into hospital in the first place. And then the next morning, I survived the operation, obviously. It was very, very painful, but they said, you didn't tell us you had an operation when you were 21. I said, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. I had an infection in my intestines, and it was growing around, it was squeezing my intestines. And I was told by a brilliant surgeon at the time called Kenneth Shute that if they hadn't operated when he did, I would have died 6 months later. So I had no belly button, basically.
Right.
And because my organs had already shifted anyway, he said, yeah, it was a simple operation. He said, because your organs are not where they're supposed to be. So, yeah, so that was weirdly, that's why I didn't have bad repercussions off the hernia.
From that, I mean, yeah. It seems to me that, you know, to say that any man has, you know, been dicing with death, clearly you would be somebody very much at the top of the list. And, I mean, it's almost like they probably should have, you know, your own bed in the hospital, really. So
well, they did say that.
Well, somebody was bound to, and so there we are. I'm sure I wouldn't have been the first. So, okay, health issues have dogged you all the way down the line. And when we say health issues, we're talking obviously major, major issues. So, I mean, how easy was it to try and focus, though, on the sort of the outside world and just getting on with the day job, so to speak, when you'd had all these, you know, things where people were almost saying, well, that's it, he's a goner. And then the next day they say, well, look at that, he, you know, he's still here.
Yeah, I did go back to work 7 weeks later after the aneurysm, mainly because I wouldn't get paid.
Well, that's a good enough reason, yeah.
Besides that, boredom probably would have settled in. But to be fair to the company I was working for at the time, they understood that I obviously had a few issues and they just let me carry on working. Unfortunately, I'm redundant. I've been made redundant last year, but that was nothing to do with the illness.
No.
It was because of a change in management. But yeah, and I think after the coma was the real one that really scared the hell out of me, and I thought, I'm going to finish that book. I don't know. I just thought, I really got to try and speak to somebody about this, just to leave some sort of legacy behind. To
yes.
say I tried. I always wanted to do a book. So after that, it just gives me the inspiration to want to do it. I never even contemplated there'd be a second volume, but just so I could leave some sort of legacy behind for the children. It was something I always wanted to do. And it was actually after I'd been diagnosed with bowel cancer. And thankfully, after chemo and all my appointments I had for that, I survived that. And I thought, well, why don't I make the book for charity, basically for cancer relief?
Yes.
Considering that, that seemed to be close to my, it seemed to be close to me at that time.
Sure.
Surprisingly, the first book sold really well. I don't mean to be nasty with my own work.
No.
Why would somebody buy artwork of somebody else's that they don't know who they are?
Mm.
I'd phone up my friend called Sean, who actually runs Jared Books, because I was buying these Lethbridge Stewart books off of him. And bizarrely, we used to just get into a conversation about Doctor Who, life in general. This was all before my incident. And then when I came back out, I said, well, I phoned him up and said, would you be interested in printing my book? And he asked what it was about, and I sent the drawings to him, and he gave me more advice than I can even remember, to be honest, about how to make the book a presentable book.
Yes.
And if it wasn't for his judgment on and his vision of how he thought it would look, I don't think it would have sold, to be honest.
Right.
But, you know, it did sell, and it's we've gone for a second volume. I didn't expect that to happen. It's it's not going to earn me millions or even thousands of dollars. The idea premises was, is that I wanted to give something back to the people, ICU, the people who looked after me when I had the cancer scare. It's not a scare because it was cancer, but that I was lucky and I got over that.
Right.
When it comes to everything in life, I guess you've got to put it down as luck. I mean, I might not be in the most physical best condition, and I'd be a fool to think that my life has not been affected by it and shortened.
Mm.
But it's been nearly 4 years now since the incident, and I'm still here. And I'm still here slugging. The third book, if I can get away with it.
Well, there you are. So the first book came out approximately when?
December 21.
21, okay. And that presumably was looking back at all of the stuff that you'd done, what, since you were relatively young? Or was it just a particular time period that was much nearer?
No, it would have been everything. I started drawing from 2005 onwards.
Right. So
I still have drawings from before then, but
yeah.
You may as well stick your five-year-old's drawings in that book if that's what you wanted to do.
No, well, there are. But I mean, it's fascinating to think, though, that you have been drawing since such a young age. So clearly, the bug was there with you from a very, very early age. So the response to the first book, obviously, was very favourable.
Yeah, we did a book sign as well in Cardiff. Comic Guru, when my Christian, he was very, very helpful. And he did help sell quite a few more books than I thought I was going to be able to sell.
Right.
This was just after COVID, so we were still masked up when we'd done it.
Mm.
So I masked up. I get quite dry, sorry.
Yeah. So people couldn't see half of your face, but they could see your eyes, but they obviously liked what they saw on the printed page.
It was nice. It's not that I want to be flattered all the time, but it really is nice when people say, oh, this is really good, and you're thinking, well, they're not being false because they don't know you from Adam. They hadn't even read the book, so they wouldn't have read the first two. It's two or three pages I put in because Sean said it's very important that you do put in your struggle to where you are now in the book. So I did. I didn't really want that to be the selling point, but he was right, and obviously it did explain where I was at that point. So, I was quite overwhelmed, I think, would be the right answer to that.
Well, it's really nice. I mean, the whole thing about Doctor Who, as we said, it's a universe in itself, isn't it, with all the various spin-offs that there are. And, you know, you've got people, obviously, who just enjoy watching the programme as a programme. But there are so many layers to Doctor Who, aren't there?
Oh, sure.
As we said, with regards to, you know, who likes this baddie, who likes that baddie, who's the best character, you know, the historical side of it, as we said, the spin-offs, the costumes, the settings. Because clearly it has evolved and it's recreated itself, which is obviously part of the whole thing with Doctor Who, over now 40, 50 years. And there seems to be as big an appetite as ever, doesn't there, for it?
Oh, sure. It's actually 60 this year.
60 years, well, wow.
Yeah. I mean, another reason why I was so passionate about the programme was I used to read the books that they brought out, the making of. You didn't see very many books like that, how they made a certain show.
Yes.
And to be honest, I don't even know how any episode of Doctor Who got out during the 70s and 80s because they were pinching pant pots from different shows and backdrops.
Yeah.
They had to really, you know, and you, okay, so use your imagination a little bit on some of them. But I think they did extraordinarily well in what little money they had.
Yes.
And now, when it came back in 2005, I bet you they weren't given a king's ransom
it
then.
No, I'm
and
sure they weren't.
Thankfully, Russell T. Davies is such a genius in everything he seems to do that he could make something out of nothing, because it was actually nothing at the time, wasn't it? I mean, it got to a point in 2005, probably a lot of people hadn't even heard of Doctor Who anymore, generation.
That's true, and I guess a lot of people thought, who did know about it, they thought, well, that's it, it's had its day.
That's right.
Move on, nothing else to see here.
Yeah.
But clearly, the scripts are vital because, I mean, regardless of how good the special effects are, I mean, the storylines have got to be plausible, even given that it's, you know, fantastical stuff in science fiction. But, you know, people like David Tennant, who I think was a great Doctor Who in the sort of the reboot by my, you know, estimations, they've also helped, haven't they? Because, you know, these are people who are damn good actors.
Yeah, I think it makes a big difference when they're passionate about what they do as well. And you can tell that they're passionate about it.
Yeah.
And they give their heart and soul. You have hit the nail on the head, because back in the 70s and 80s, it's that if your lead person, I won't say man, if your lead person doesn't convince you that he is what he is, then you haven't got a show.
Sure.
And every single person that came along in the original series, they made you believe that you were going with them to somewhere fantastical.
Yeah. And it's time and place, as we've said. For a lot of people, obviously, when they were first hooked, they were a particular age. And in many cases then, even though there have been some great people come along to fill the shoes subsequently, they'll still probably always say, as I probably would, well, of course, my favourite was John Pertwee, because, you know, in the 70s, he was the man. Other people then, you know, will give you another half a dozen different names, depending on their age.
You've got to have your own doctor.
You got to. No, I think you have to. So, the book, the second book, absolutely out now?
It is.
Yes.
It came out December last year, but we delayed a little bit with promotion on this one, just to get people, mainly because of financial reasons, to with people at the moment, and we're still in the latter days of COVID, really, and we're trying to get things back to normal. So, but yeah, we're on a bit of a publicity campaign with it, just to make people aware of it more than anything else.
Excellent.
I've added to the beginning of it, it's another 3 pages worth of my sorrow.
Right.
Basically the hernia and the ingrowing toenail.
All the story. Well, there's been too much of that. Ken, thank you so much for coming in. I do obviously wish you all the very best in every sense that the Grim Reaper doesn't follow you around anymore, because God knows, I think you've had enough of that. But yeah, exciting times really with this second book.
Oh, yeah. I'm hoping with the next couple of signings that we have, if it sells as well as the first, there will be a third.
Yes.
Only because I've got so much drawings. I can't even remember how many there are.
Still plenty more to come. Loads. Oh, right.
I would like to carry on drawing, yeah.
There we are. So let's just remind people, Candy Jar, of course, are our chums. They are the people publishing the book. It is called Who? A History in Art 2. As you say, there's money going to cancer research as well, which is a good thing. A very, very good thing. Ken, thank you so much for coming in this morning. Safe trip back up to Newport.
Not a problem. Nice day.
And I'll look forward to catching up with you again very soon.
I'll see you soon.
Thank you, sir. Right, there we are. So that's Ken. I'll give you all the details again before the end of the show about the book, but it's coming up to 10:30 now, so let's get the local news.
Radio Cardiff Local News.
Our top story, a man from Cardiff is